3, 2, 1, and we are recording. Very nice. Tom, welcome to the Trap House.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. I feel very safe. This is being recorded, right?
So, this is being recorded. This is being, as in the previous podcast that we recorded here, we're moving up. Yep. We're from Zoom to the most shadiest area in London.
Yep. Can't wait to see what next year brings.
So it's step by step. We're here at PGC, and you had a great talk on Monday, which I did not listen.
Okay.
Because I get to do this, which is more than a great talk.
Exactly. You got the talk was 20 minutes. You get more than that.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. Today we're going to talk about market predictions.
Yes.
And you were as a lead analyst at Newzoo, and Newzoo being the leading data platform, I'm just going to describe it in a way that I understand, and you correct me please, for PC, console, a little bit of a mobile, you do consulting.
Yes.
And consulting is, for Newzoo, it's like IKEA, where you give the tools, and if the customer says, I also want this tool thing to be built, then you come in and build them. So basically it's an add-on service that you do for your customers.
That's correct. So I'll just do it on our platform. There's no mobile data. Mm-hmm. We do cover mobile as part of our reports because it is half the industry.
Yes.
So would be wrong not to, but our data platform is purely PC and console. And then we have our reports in which we also cover mobile. We have custom research, consumer research as well. And then indeed we have consulting business, which is fairly as you describe mm-hmm. it. I think that's it's a good analogy.
The IKEA model.
There's also occasions where, like, if there's a questions that kind of falls in between some mm-hmm. of these data products we have, we can also get the consulting team to fill in the gaps a little bit. But essentially,
so for the customers to understand, those who are using Newzoo or thinking about using Newzoo, is they will give you the report, and if you feel pinched for time, they will also do the custom analysis for you for those beautiful boardroom presentations.
Absolutely.
For strategy. So don't feel that there's an obstacle.
there's no reason not to work with us.
So the shilling part is over. Yeah, let's jump in into the most interesting part. So you delivered a 10-piece prediction series.
Yes.
We're going to cover a lot of them now, but rest is for the folks to download. It's for free.
It's for free. It's available on our website as per this morning, actually. When this go out, we'll go out.
Link in the description.
Morning. Link in the description. No more needs to be said. It's free.
It's free. It's good. And this time around, what makes it different is that you've added quotes from your customers, which are biggest publishers around the world. Yep. A little bit what we've been doing in Deconstructor Fund, so I hope that we've been able to influence with that idea and inspiration.
Great inspiration.
So it's fun to read.
I think it adds a bit of, there's only so much that can be said as relative outsiders.
Yeah.
Like we are dedicated to games, and we work with all of them. But also to have the insider view part of the report, I think, makes it stronger. But you guys would agree.
We agree. So, deep breath. Let's kick it off. I have a lot of, like, I have notes on notes because I go through your reports. I don't have a consulting person.
I
need to actually analyze all the stuff.
Yeah.
Let's start with number one. The market will continue to recover and grow.
Yes.
I'm going to already say that's not going to happen, but let's listen why you think it will happen.
Okay. Let's go there.
So growth is estimated to be 1.3% for 2024.
Oh, yeah, that is until 2020, CAGR until 2026.
Got it right.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, yeah. So a very, very tiny growth rate.
Yeah.
Not a decline, not a downswing, but we're almost at an even level. And this is noticeably still below 2021.
Yes.
The numbers are not inflation adjusted, right?
That is correct.
Okay. And that paints a very different picture because traditionally we've accustomed to about 2% inflation.
Yeah, even more the last 2 years.
Yeah, but during the last couple of years, we've been seeing anything between 5 to 15, depending on the European country and how reliant they are on gas. Let's put it that way. So why aren't we bouncing back as fast as everybody wanted us to bounce back?
I mean, we can spend the next half hour talking about that.
Just on a macro level, like even like where do you see that the growth haven't occurred? Because let's put it this way. Last time we discussed, it was projected that console would grow 7.7% or something like that.
Yeah,
we did that materialize?
No. No, so we
talk to me about that.
Revise that. So let's start on console. I think what happened on console, at least as an outsider, is super interesting because you would expect, seeing how many big releases sold so many units last year, that that growth would materialize.
Hogwarts, Zelda, you name it.
Yeah, Diablo. I mean,
yes. Diablo. That's
doesn't
true.
Have the staying power, but it sold units. EAFC still sold units, Call of Duty, despite
FIFA did
the
good.
Reception. Yeah,
it's not like, FIFA, EAFC.
Yeah, exactly. So Madden did crazy again, like all of those games. And then on top of that, you get indeed Hogwarts Legacy, Zelda, Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, well,
so you would expect.
Yes.
But what we saw, and I think this is a sign of a couple of the other things we also talk about in the report, like talking about the future of live services, etc., premium, that selling all of those units and people playing that hurt live service revenues. That went down.
Mm.
So what we believe happened, and we have the data to show for hours played on console went down year on year. Theoretically, at least we think, because people were playing these finite premium experiences and then going on to the next one. But maybe because it was such a good year for premium releases, and also because, you know, there's still pressure on disposable income, there's still high inflation,
yes.
The economy is not great, they bought a new game, but then did not spend on Fortnite, Roblox.
How about subscription? Did they continue Xbox Pass?
No.
Because we've seen the growth really stall
yes.
with the subscription.
Yes, very much so.
So premium, so if I would just crudely conclude, premium cannibalized the other two business models.
Absolutely. I think that's a fair conclusion.
And that is the basically the big conversation that we had last time when we were talking about the challenges of console.
Yeah, exactly.
Where there are three competing business models stalling growth and really pressure on users' time because you have the social medias, you got the video streaming, you got everything else that is going on. And now amazing games launch and they're like, well, I'm going to play Baldur's Gate and TikTok.
Else.
And that's about it. And then in the evening, a little bit of a Netflix and we're good.
Essentially, yes. And I think, I didn't foresee that our conversation from last time would show in the data that quickly.
Yeah.
But we are evaluating what happened in 2023, and that's what we see. So, you can say that premium, to a certain extent, cannibalized lifestyle. Mm. It's not like the market is going down.
Yeah,
we still forgot a tiny bit of growth, adjust for inflation.
Yeah, but not the 7.7 where it was pushing the whole market forward.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. And it's really cool that we actually discussed it. So for folks, I'll link also the previous conversation as well as the blog post where you can really go deeper into that. I don't want to spend, again, too much time on the console business model.
it is fascinating this year, I think. I do think that we'll see, there's a lot of threats coming together here because I do think that we'll also see in the coming, this year, 2024, there's not that much games coming that we know of.
Yeah.
Like the release schedule is looking light. So it'd be very interesting to see, okay, does that mean that people then bounce back
To live ops
and games? And of course there was this idea that live service was the future. Mm-hmm. Also for console, a lot of games were being pivoted into live service games. We're seeing some of that now retract, right? There's games that are not being launched or games that are being turned into premium games again. Because the live service model is, as you mentioned, like it drives off engagement, and then you're not just competing with other games, you're competing with social media apps, you're competing with video streaming, you're competing for attention. And if you can't get those hours and your business model was built to maximize hours because that turns into spending, it's not an infinite market.
How about this? Is the console market kind of capped in terms of, like, are we at like 90% of the maximum of what console market can deliver? Because if we're seeing this big of a shift with premium, like a lot of great premium games launched, the market kind of stays the same. because just eyeballs and money just shifts between it.
Yeah.
And we're like, seems pretty maximized.
Yes, but I would have also thought that maybe in 2018, roughly, yeah. and then 2019, and then the pandemic happened. And what I think is also very fair is, look, I don't know if console is ever going to make the impact that it has mm-hmm. in Western markets, in emerging markets, because there's already such a history of mobile and then PC gaming. But there are, like, console revenues, much more so than PC and mobile revenues, are concentrated in a few regions, mm-hmm. right? You got North America, yes. Europe, Japan, Oceania. And that's it. So there is a lot of players out there that are currently not playing en masse on consoles. So there's an addressable market
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And then those players would absolutely love to play like the big narrative titles yes. that launch exclusively yeah. on console. But the issue is, of course, you know,
access to hardware.
Access to the games, disposable income, yeah. economy. Yeah. So and especially because if you want to get their attention, you're competing with very lower priced or already available devices.
Yeah.
So I don't really know if that market's ever going to be there. Mm-hmm. But because that addressable market hasn't expanded yet, I also wouldn't say that there's a cap Got on it. Console Got right it. Now.
Especially but, since every next generation is more and more expensive yeah. considerably. So it doesn't make it more accessible. It's not like no. the cheaper iPhones go to cheaper markets. It's
well,
like,
you do have now the Series S and the yeah. Series X yeah. and the PlayStation doesn't really do that. And I think that was a bit of a play to get more addressable market in these regions. Yeah. I don't think that's particularly paid off.
How about PC? Like, so console cap for now, because of multiple macroeconomic reasons.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
PC, did PC stay the same?
Actually did a little bit better than we expected.
Damn.
Which, I'll be honest, I still don't fully understand yeah. how that happened, because yeah. I did not see that coming. PC has been kind of trudging along for many years. And it's a good market. Like, there's a lot of opportunity there. But in terms of the crazy growth potential, it was yeah. console where, you know, there was more capability to shift that business model. PC.
But one thing that we were talking before I forgot, sorry yeah. for to cut you off, no, before I forget, is like we talked about console games, like especially PlayStation games or launching on PC.
Yeah.
They did actually really well.
They did.
Like, and when we last discussed, you kind of said that, you know, porting to PC console games is not that good of a business.
Yeah.
And I think you were a little bit wrong with that.
I think I'll have to even work okay, a little good. Bit.
Yes. So it is, like, we learn.
Yeah. No, and I think maybe what influenced me then is, like, the quality of the ports wasn't yes. as good yet. But Sony's made acquisitions that of studios that are really, I'm blanking on the name, but they're
the, the Dutch studio.
The Dutch studio.
Yeah.
Nexus?
Something like that.
Yeah. They do a really good job, and obviously it's selling. So yes, yeah. it does work. And on top of that, you know, Baldur's Gate, it's technically not a PC exclusive, but I think the vast majority of units sold will yeah. be on PC. There's always going to be a market for competitive multiplayer games, and that market is on PC. And yeah, PC kind of bucked the trend. So throughout the year, we had made our predictions for 2023. Unfortunately for us and the rest of the market, by the way, we had to sort of revise those downwards.
That's good. At least you go back and then say what you got right and what you got wrong.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the job that we do. But I'm always happier to say, hey, we were wrong. It's actually twice as much yes. as we thought. But, you know, that's what happened during the pandemic. Now we're in a different market. But anyway, PC was the one where we actually said, oh, actually, it's grown more than we had originally predicted or forecast.
Yeah, that's and mobile was pretty much the same, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, mobile is a rough one. China going down, some countries going up. Like,
yeah, it depends a bit per region. But overall, if you look at the entire market, China is... Indeed, in a tough, it's a tough market.
Regulatory market is horrible. And without some key franchise, I'm not going to spend too much time on mobile because most of the stuff we talk mobile, but without some key franchise launching like Monopoly Go or key franchises scaling like Dream Games, blanking. Anyway, that amazing game from Turkey that scaled really big.
It would have
been a down year, pretty much.
It's
Two things that came out in your report about the market as well. So we're still in point one. Go ahead.
Can I one more comment, please, about the market, because we're on to market predictions. Yeah. There's one thing that I have to mention when it comes to macroeconomics is foreign exchange rates. Because we do report on the market in dollar value, but a lot of the money that is being generated, especially in the East, like in Japan, China, Korea, first is the dollar. All those three currencies went down last year, and that does have an impact on the market as well.
Got it.
Because it's a consequence of reporting on the global market in dollar values that we have to make these adjustments based on exchange rates. And that played a huge part in the market value, particularly in the East.
Yes, and dollar is not as stable as it used to be. Like, it tends to go like 5 points up and down all the time.
Yeah, but it's gone up every quarter pretty much for the last 6 or 7 versus the yen and the won. And so it makes an impact. I feel like when we talk global, it's important to
mention. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Data AI. Yes, they were called App Annie back in the day, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how Data AI is the first company to combine consumer and market data with the power of artificial intelligence. And Data AI does this to unlock unique consumer and market insight to accelerate competitive advantages across all digital channels worldwide. What we here at Deconstructor of Fun really like is Data AI's Game IQ tool. It's this fantastic market and competitive intelligence tool for mobile gaming that allows publishers to really get to the feature level of a game without doing a full-on deconstructing first. Using this tool, your team can quickly tie features to performance KPIs, which will help you make difficult roadmap decisions. It's also a great tool to identify hidden growth opportunities as you can analyze games on a scale. As you well know, there are hundreds of thousands of gaming apps in the App Store and thousands of new mobile games released each month. And while we don't want you to stop reading and listening to Deconstructor Fun, the fact is we can't cover it all. With Data AI, and especially their Game IQ tool, you'll be able to efficiently determine what features provide a lift, make roadmap decisions based on accurately modeled expected outcomes, discover how competitors lifted performance through feature releases, benchmark performance against your competitors, focus with confidence on the highest potential genre for a new game release. We here at Deconstructor Fun are huge fans of Data AI, so what are you waiting for? Go to Data AI and try the service for free. The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for Games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experience that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape.
A lot of things that in the end affect bigly when you sum them up. But
correct.
More on the micro level.
Yes.
Development budgets are expected to go down.
Yes.
And in the report, there's executive sentiments, and it feels like profitability is really important. So a lot of projects that are not profitable or not, you know, deemed to be profitable or, you know, smart are now being shut down, and we see that in the layoffs.
Yeah.
But the other part is, like, most of the executives believe that the future and the ongoing development budgets are going to be smaller. And I feel like this is something new, because it feels like every year the budgets have been bigger and bigger, and there's almost like a moat to start making a game, because it's always more expensive. Exactly. Yeah. Now executives are saying, we're going to go smaller now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're hearing. And I think what's happening is that, you know, the executives are banking or hoping on
AI.
Surprise. Exactly.
Just put in robots and have them make a game.
I hope not. As a fan, I hope not. But, you know, it's maybe the robots know better what we like than we do.
Yeah.
So. No, it's happening. And it's also... I was reading a report just last week, and there was a quote there saying, like, there's a lot of projects that got greenlit during, like, 2020, 21.
Yeah.
That should never have been greenlit.
Metaverse, NFTs. Yeah.
Well, not even just that. Like, generally in just good old regular PC and console gaming.
Yeah, like a strategy studio making a shooter game.
Yes. Well, that's one of those where you, in hindsight, it's very easy to say, like, yeah, that was never going to work.
Exactly. So reality has returned back to the market.
Yes, I think
one thing that was really interesting as a comment was that the executives believe that M&A will grow in 24.
Yeah, you know, it's the executive wishful.
Okay, that's moving on.
I don't think actually here at PGC I've been able to talk a little bit with investors and they share the sentiment, but there's no signs yet to say that it's,
and this to me felt like somebody just wished from a Santa Claus that the companies will be get bought again, but with higher interest rates, with, as we see, pinch on growth, on the available resources. I don't know what type of an M&A they're thinking will happen. And the same executives were here. Also, they gave an opinion that they don't see new IPs popping up. Palworld said in January, hello.
Yeah, but that's exactly. Yeah. and congrats to them on the success. But I think in general, that's not a new sentiment.
Yeah.
I think for the past years, 5, 6, 7 years, especially in the bigger studios, it's risk averse. It's relying on known IP.
Franchises.
Franchising, sequelitis. And it's always been from the, you know, a bit from the outskirts, from the smaller developers that are risking something, that are building something new. And they can take the market with a completely new IP.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way the development market works right now, is that something like Palworld 9 out of 10 times going to come from
smaller,
unknown or smaller studio,
and that's how it always is. Like
the
smaller companies are more risk thirsty and can do these type of things,
and they also have to.
Yes,
right? If you just make the same game that's already made by a AAA, then you're not going to get 3 or 4 million units sold within a couple of days.
That's one of the key takeaways. Actually, I need to write this down because that is very important for smaller companies to remember, is like, you can't be doing what the big ones are doing, not only in the terms of size, but you can't even go to the same direction.
No.
Take a risk and go to a different direction.
And that's more and more true in you know, with these markets and with these live services that are popular, because there's no intermediate period. There's no bridging period. Like, before that, you would have, like, oh, there'd be a Grand Theft Auto, and then 7 years later there'd be a new Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
But in between that time, people would be looking to play a experience like that to fill the gap.
Yes.
But now they launch Grand Theft Auto 8 times,
yes.
And you have GTA Online.
Yes,
and then next year now, because 2025, we'll get the next one. And there's been no room in that time to get in that market, because it's only been them. And that is true for so many other genres where you see, like, the big guys being very successful. So if you want to succeed, you have to be doing something different.
Yeah, perfect. All right, we've covered the market. Let's talk about the other trends that you've seen here. So 24 will be a lean year for gaming companies. And so the engagement and spending boom ended in 2022, replaced by inflation, high interest rates, careful investment environments, layoffs, and wars now. We're even multiple already.
Yeah.
So on mobile, what has been very interesting is that there was a notion that mobile is recession-proof.
Mm-hmm.
Or games are recession-proof. And
definitely
mobile proves not to be, because we can see that the decrease in disposable income is decrease in in-app purchases. We see that the increase in inflation is decrease in in-app purchases.
Yeah.
How is this trend being on PC and console?
It's I find these kind of statements hard to make, even though like I don't want to go ahead and challenge you on the mobile part, but even there, right, there's been so much happening on mobile that isn't related to income levels. And yes, there has been inflation and a pressure on disposable income, and yes, also IP and et cetera has gone down, but there's also been all these privacy changes, and I struggle
that's
to say
true.
That there's
that's
direct
true.
Relation.
If you're not able to acquire that many valuable users, then of course the in-app purchases are going to start going down. Also, as you pointed out with that, we could say that the rise of web shops and direct to consumer stores will be seen as decrease in in-app purchases made, because the in-app purchases are made outside the data analytics view.
I'll tell you that just yesterday, coming off PGC, the main topic
was direct
web stores.
Direct. To, of course, because they're sponsoring the whole event.
Yeah, exactly. Every other talk. You have a talk on, hey, come to our web store. Then you have something else, and you have a new talk about, have you considered coming to our web store? So let me remind you again in 20 minutes. Exactly. They sponsor it, but they set it up. And it does feel like, because they sponsor so many events, I do feel like the tide is shifting a little bit. Like, now people are listening.
Yeah.
And that is part of it because, you know, there's more of a focus on profitability.
Yes.
And of course, you know, going direct.
Owning your customer relationship. That is an important part as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Retention, profitability. So that's...
Now we're singing the song for web shops.
Do they sponsor you guys?
Yes, okay. They do. Shout out to Ixola.
You're welcome. Can I just
interrupt? Yes, please, let's just move on.
I have my talk, and I'm talking about, you know, mobile developers.
Yeah.
You should maybe expand your addressable market to PC and console as well. I don't say drop everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's this. And it's the end of my talk, I get a question from the crowd.
Yeah.
And it's like, the question is something like, if you would advise mobile developers to go here, would you also advise them to switch payment providers? And I'm seeing that there's a branded hat. It's like she's wearing a hat with the name on it.
Of the payment provider.
Yeah. It's like, do you want me to mention your company?
What?
Like a very interesting question.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a very sponsored event, but
yes.
Great. Back to the topic. PC and console recession-proof. I think what we were speaking about earlier, right, that
the premium
has cannibalized live services and it has cannibalized subscription. It kind of points to the fact that it isn't totally recession-proof.
Yeah. Or people just spent so much time that they felt there was not...
Or needed. That, you know, yeah. It is. So there's always a nuance, and we can say because there has been so many good games, and they are generally playing less hours, and you know, playing less hours doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the recession or not. In fact, people might have more hours during a recession
because they don't have jobs. Fuck,
it can happen.
True.
I don't know. It could be.
It's like it's a true broad of generalization because we honestly don't see all the data.
Yeah.
And whenever we see it, shout out to Data AI. But Data AI doesn't see in-app ad revenue, nor does it report web shop revenue. So in that sense, it might be challenging. So we'll probably go through some of the views of maybe some of the genres that are less web shop and in-app ad related. And if we see the decline there, then we can have more. That's actually a good graph to make. So I'll talk to good old Randy and Lexi about that. So you mentioned layoffs.
Yes.
What do you think happens in 24? Less, more?
Oh, God.
That was one of the questions that you had in the report.
It was. You have it in front of you. The executive said less, right?
That's what they said. They were like...
Yeah, a little bit mixed. I think this morning we already saw... Okay, sorry, I'm referring to this morning.
Which one?
Riot.
Riot was this morning.
The workforce.
Was Unity also this morning?
No, a couple of days
They have
ago.
Another round.
Yeah. Oh, another round?
Yeah, of course.
Fuck me. Okay.
They're in spiral.
Yeah. Oh, tier. Right now it's looking like it's just going to be the same. And like it's part of what we say when we say it's going to be a lean year for gaming, lower development budgets than the consequence.
Mm, less starts. And
yeah.
Yeah, if you ask me, I'm more on the pessimistic side here. You don't ask me, but I can say my opinion, and I would say that we are going to see at least same amount of layoffs or more, because the layoffs that we have, like the layoff started not in the beginning of the year, so we have now a full year that could be potentially of layoffs, and the ones that we haven't seen much is startups. And if you are at these events and you ask people, what's your runway, which of course not everybody will tell you, but if you're at the investor events, people will tell you that they have between 3 to 4 months left, which is not enough even to get around. And so we're going to see a lot of startups.
Yeah. Layoffs, closures.
Yeah, closures. Yeah. And those are not reported. People just say, our company is done.
And then the issue that already was last year, but on top of that, again this year, is like, at least in the past, when there was a studio closure, there'd be investment money, and these developers could start something from themselves and try something new. But in this climate, that's extremely hard.
Yes. Yeah. At the moment, what's happening on the other... That's very correct point. So as companies fail and as people get laid off, they are not as likely to start something new, because venture capital doesn't really know what the next thing is. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was talking to a founder today. I've talked to so many people. Anyway, what he said is, like, one of the investors told him this: I'm looking for something different. Wow.
Great.
And I know what the investor meant. But something different meant is, like, they don't know what is going to grow. Yeah. They don't know what can be successful. They feel like nothing is successful at the moment. And so their feedback is just like, surprise me. And there are some of the things that I've seen throughout the conference with founders showing me very interesting things that I don't want to talk about, that are very unique. And I'm like, wow, that's different.
Yeah,
it could be not in terms of gameplay, it's even in business models different. Okay. But most of the stuff is the same. And when you come with the same saying, hey, we can do a puzzle game, it's like, who are you again? Like, what's the team? And so that is the very challenging. So getting the pre-seed, seed money to kick something off is difficult. And through that, we're going to see a lot of startups fail and people looking for jobs. And unfortunately, the big companies are laying off, so they're not hiring anybody. So on the other side, there's app economy that is doing extremely well. So there are other sources, but in terms of gaming, there's probably just going to be less jobs at the moment.
I believe that, I think so too.
Okay, so on to the more happier things.
Good, finally.
Which is, why are multi-game subscription game... multi-game subscription growth is slowing down. So multi-game subscription service, meaning Xbox Game Pass. That's pretty much it. Like, in terms of like the biggest ones, is the one that has been really the most invested.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the challenge with that, I'm just going to lay it off, is like, when you have an economy of scale, meaning that for each, like when they get more audience in a subscription service, each game you make is technically cheaper because you have a bigger audience that you're catering with that new game. If the growth of the audience stops, then when you start, you know, just go into the final number, then the games are getting more expensive or not getting cheaper. And through that, that's why they rely on subscription growth. That's why it's so important for Netflix always to report the growth of subscribers, because if it goes down, the stock goes down.
Yeah.
And in the case of Microsoft, the growth rate is going down.
And they stop reporting user numbers.
That's the worst thing.
Yeah.
That's like, let's not talk about that.
Yeah. That's a selling, telling sign.
Yes. So talk to me about that.
You summed it up pretty well. What we're seeing is, so Xbox Game Pass is a large part of that market. We do also include, for example, PlayStation Plus, even though we also realize that a lot of people subscribe to PlayStation Plus for the online services.
Oh, well, you kind of have to.
Yeah, and the games that you get are just, an extra. And then there's a ton of smaller services there that reach an audience, but it's not like Game Pass.
Yeah.
The user growth is tampering off. We don't have insight into the actual numbers anymore, although we do have some on our platform.
Yeah.
We get some receipt data that allows us to track it a little bit. It's an incomplete view, but at least it's a view. And with that, the revenue, like there was some, I think because there was price increases throughout last year, it's managed to still stabilize, grow a little bit.
Yeah.
But I generally think that's because of the price increases, not so much of the user growth. And that's problematic for
yes.
multi-game subscriptions, because this business is not in a place yet where growth tapering off is a sustainable thing. Like, this should very much be in a phase where it is the fastest growing monetization model on console, and it is not.
Yeah.
So the outlook for multi-game subscriptions at the moment is pretty grim.
Wow. We can move on. We've been saying this for a long time, so we can move on. Chris is happy.
Yeah.
Because he was very against the subscription model, because it devalues the games.
It does devalue the game. I also think I do want to point that out as well, is like the notion of having a monthly subscription to your games library, I struggle with the use case, mm-hmm. because how many games do you play per month?
Mm. This is crazy. We were actually talking about this because Phil Spencer posted that he spent 800 hours playing Xbox, which is impressive.
Yeah.
And also raises question marks both.
Yeah.
but I try to limit my gaming, to be honest. Like, I get hooked just like anybody else in gaming, and then I'm just chasing on work afterwards.
Yeah.
So less. I would say, how about this? My hourly play fluctuates significantly, where there are weeks where I play too much, and then I don't play at all. I'm
I'm kind of
pulling myself out.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. Yeah. I get into games, and then I put in 30 hours in 3 days, and then I
go. They're the last things that when I go to bed, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have. It's like, what am I thinking? It's
like, no, but what I'm trying to say is, even if you play a lot of games, typical game now takes, what, 50 hours to finish?
Yes, it's a lot.
If you play 15 hours in a month, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
And in my case, like, I play a couple of games per year.
Yeah.
So why would I pay for a subscription?
Yes. Yeah, it's not the same. You cannot devour, it's like not, you do a show.
Yeah,
or,
no. And it's active, right? You can't just put it on in the background, because I know a lot of people just go through Netflix shows as they're working, or
and the accessibility is another one, because if you have as you have Netflix, it's almost compulsory these days. When you're in your bed, that's the last thing you can watch.
Yeah,
but,
or when I'm on the way here to London.
Exactly, you watch it, but you're not gonna play Baldur's Gate.
Yeah,
on your way
and then I get, well, actually, I have a Steam Deck. So.
Yeah, you can do that.
I could. Yeah, wow. I could. But most of the time, I do sometimes, but it's still, I think the second part of it is that it's a very, very active thing.
Yeah.
And you can't just play a little bit, at least I can't.
Bite-sized.
I know there are people that can, but I can't play bite-sized. Whereas, you know, you can watch a few minutes of Netflix show and then turn it on later.
Yeah, immersive.
I don't think the medium particularly well has a good fit with subscriptions.
Interesting. I like the idea, but it seems like it's challenged and may not work in the end.
Yeah.
One thing that he mentioned in the prediction was gaming platforms. So meaning like Fortnite is a gaming platform.
Yeah.
Roblox is a gaming platform. They seem to be doing really well.
Roblox is doing really well.
Is that disrupting also these other services?
It's hard to prove.
Yeah.
Because you can't track users across that. But I absolutely think so, yes. Because essentially, the promise is very similar.
Yeah.
Like, you get on our platform, and then there's all these different kind of games and experiences that you can play.
That are easy to play because you know this platform, and it's the same control system, but
exactly.
It's a different gameplay.
Yeah. Plus, you get to carry around, you know, the avatar that you build.
Progression stays throughout.
Yeah. and the diversity of experiences on, and now Fortnite as well, you know.
And social graph stays as well.
And that too. And that too. Well, technically there are, you know, there's community on Xbox as well. But no, I think those are all very fair points. So again, we don't have the data to track users around that, so I can't necessarily prove that it's happening. But I think it very clearly offers the same thing. The same idea of being able to jump around games and try new things, but in a freemium model.
Yeah. So that's a way, again, time away from others.
Yeah.
It's like the multiverse that they were selling, and now it's working. People don't call it multiverse. Now it's called the gaming platform.
Yeah, well, we switch names every year, I feel
True.
2 years ago, these were metaverses.
Yeah. Metaverse, multiverse. Yes, yeah. Correct. This was the metaverse.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about metaverse, but the kind of like the core idea is actually working. So, but...
this is working. For these two platforms, it's working.
Okay.
I wanted to talk to you about Heroic Labs. Building a successful game is hard enough without worrying about building your own game tech as well. Heroic Labs provides a comprehensive game stack to help you get your game into market faster and scale beyond the competition. With their Unity game framework Hero, you can cut development and prototyping time in half and quickly add social, economy, and reward system to grow your game. Satori, the LiveOps platform built specifically for the games industry, lets you run live events, A/B tests, deliver dynamic content to players, and always keep your game growing. Nakama, the industry's leading open source game server, lets you develop locally, providing all social and competitive features for your game, and then seamlessly transition to their Heroic Cloud hosted service and easily scale to meet the largest of audience demands. Find out how to get started at heroiclabs.com. Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Exola's got your back with Exola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Exola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Exola's PayStation in action? Visit exola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description.
Prediction number four was that the companies will return to develop premium games.
Yeah.
Is this heavily based on the success of the premium games in 23, or like what is this based on?
Yes, that's part of it, but I think what it is more based on is the business model for a live service becomes harder and harder to succeed in as other live services are successful, because you have to compete with all of them, and you compete for time. If you make a premium game, and I'm oversimplifying this, but you need a very good marketing campaign, a good strategy, you know, to get your game into the market, and then you see the unit sales run in, and you either recoup your development cost or you haven't.
Then you put it on sale.
And then you put it on sale, and then you do the long tail.
Or on subscription service.
And then you put it on a subscription service, and then you sell it to Netflix.
True.
That's the strategy. But with the live service, it doesn't work like that, right? You still have to get your users in. And to be fair, there's like the premium franchises that can do both, right?
Yes.
They can sell and then they do a live service.
Or microtransactions.
Yeah, microtransactions, exactly. But if you're trying to go free to play and then, you know, do it that way, you have to get your users in, you have to do that, but also you have to keep them in for a long time, continuously feed them content that they will purchase.
Gigantic teams,
gigantic amount of resources in order to make, you know, to recoup that development cost, which is constantly rising because you're going to have to keep a team on that.
Yes.
And, you know, in a market where the market's growing 20% every year, that's a good model.
Mm-hmm.
But in a market where that's not, and you're competing with all of these others, then that becomes very more and more challenging to succeed in. And I think it's more that realization plus the fact that there is, you know, premium games can sell very well. So many records broken last year.
Yeah.
Is what why we predict this sort of pivot to happen again. It's not, we're not trying to imply that there's not going to be any more new live services.
No, it's...
But it's a shift in... We're predicting a shift in mindset. We're coming from basically 2020, 2021. Everything is a live service, and now we're...
To like, you know. Yeah.
Maybe not.
So, in other words, what is happening is like, also on console, the market is saturating in terms of live service, because we've seen this on PC, where each of the categories, let's say MOBAs, you got Valve, and you got Riot, League of Legends, and Dota 2.
Yeah.
Anything else does not exist, like pretty much.
No.
In terms of MOBAs. And then you got the shooters, you got the Counter-Strike, and you got the Valorant. And
yeah, I mean, that's not to say that there's no way to be successful in any of this.
No, of course
there's plenty of examples where they are, but it's just getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that same thing is indeed on console. But it's the same games. Well, not MOBAs. You can't play a MOBA on console.
Yes.
But it's the same shooters. Or Fortnite. It's Roblox now. It's your sports games. And there's not that much more room. Maybe it is getting saturated.
And the challenge is also that the leaders in that market are really good. Like they are not stopping. Like what Fortnite is doing, what Roblox is doing. It's not like they're parked themselves on the top and being like, we are gonna defend this position. No, they're just moving forward.
Yeah.
With Lego Fortnites, with all the games that Roblox has been putting out.
Yeah.
All the user generated content economy that they've been putting out in both of the platforms, UFN and so forth. So it's like the distance between you're just starting to where things are, you will not catch up. It doesn't matter who you are.
No.
So
I think it's practically impossible.
Yes. What about the subscription services? Like, the way I understood first, the subscription service almost tries to kill premium games?
Yeah.
What's like, how is that? So, you're predicting the rise of premium games.
Yeah.
Are you at the same time predicting demise of subscription services? Or is it like, are these two contradicting, or...?
I think that not necessarily. It depends on how you go about it, right? I think Microsoft putting games day one on Game Pass obviously means they are cannibalizing premium revenues.
Of course,
that I don't think that we have to question that. But that's the strategy.
Yeah.
There's no other studio that does that. Basically, does it? EA do it with EA Play? I think they do it. But then EA...
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it still is.
Okay. I haven't heard about that in a while.
No, me neither. I believe it still is. But anyway, I think with that, it is... especially on the live service part, people don't buy EA games. They want FIFA, EAFC,
or EAFC.
Madden, or... MLB The Show, whatever the Americans play.
No.
So I think that's a different conversation entirely. But for the most part, all other subscription services aren't about putting day one games on a subscription service. In that case, I do think that both can coexist.
Mm.
Because particularly on console, AAA, you know, you're going to get a lot of your unit sales in your right after launch and then in your first sale. So and then if you forego maybe some of the long tail sales that you could get in favor of putting it on a subscription service, it's not going to make a massive impact.
Yeah, and the Steam is another place where it's very interesting, where you can have the early access sales going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
The early beta, like essentially just running it for years and then launching it big. So it's like we're not even talking about long tail, we're talking about early tail.
Yeah, yeah, it's like kind of flipping head on.
Exactly. Yeah. So you get like the drip from the beginning and then the big push and then.
Yeah, I don't see that working anywhere else than PC though.
Yeah.
I think the PC audience is so much more experimental in the sense that they're and I feel like hypes like Pow World, which would be the example now.
Yeah.
That happens on PC.
And there was Pixel Boom or something like that, the Battlefield looking game by four devs and Valheim.
Yeah.
Like there's constantly these type of small hits.
It happens and then exciting. Everyone latches on and it gets,
and then they never have enough staying power because four people cannot build it. If there would be a company, here's an idea for people that have been laid off, maybe in publishing function. If you can set up a company that essentially acquires these small games that are going to blow up, just get the asset from them and get the live ops from them, run it properly, give it sustainability, then that's a good business because currently they just pop. The guys make several millions of dollars.
Yeah.
They're all burned out. They're like, we're gone.
Yeah.
But give them those millions of dollars, say, well done. Yeah. We're gonna handle the growth from here, just like Scopely did with the with the Stumble guys. Do that with PC.
Yeah.
So, just food for thought. Yeah, sell that to VCs.
Maybe.
Or actually, private equity. Yeah. That's a private equity model.
There's inherently though I think a need for experimentation, new experiences with the PC audience that is unique to that platform, and that means that. No matter how good your live service for your small team is going to be, essentially something new is going to pop up. Yes. It's going to get hype. It's going to get, and it's going to attract millions of players out of practically nothing.
A couple of more to go.
Yes.
Mobile developers will turn to PC gaming.
Yes.
That was your prediction, and I'm going to say that that is not going to be true already on the face, because here's my point.
Okay.
The reasoning for this, that mobile developers will turn to PC, in the prediction was said that because advertising is so hard on mobile, we're going to go PC. Cool beans, guys, but PC is still harder, even with all the privacy changes, to market than mobile.
Yeah.
Where that falls on its face. And then the second part is, we've talked about console developers trying to do live op games, and we're talking about one type of a team with one type of a competence doing another type of a game. Here we're talking about the same thing, but somehow we're thinking that people who did mobile are going to be successful on a different platform, even though people from different platform come to mobile and they're unsuccessful. Yeah. And I think the same is going to happen. Mobile developers are used to different type of session length, different type of engagement, different type of hooks, different type of monetization mechanics that will not work with PC. Actually, counter them where they hate it. We've seen Plarium release their raid Shadow Legends on Steam.
Yeah, dude.
They're just getting bombed. Yeah. I don't know if they're, at least on the common side, people are not liking it.
Yeah.
And so I find this prediction hard to believe that it's going to come true. But what I do believe about this is these PC SKUs, Scopely has been doing PC SKUs, Plarium is another one where you can play it on your client while you're on those beautiful Zoom calls from your busy work from home days. And when your boss is telling you about something and you're doing a raid at the same time, I believe that works really well.
Yeah, and I actually, had you seen my talk yesterday? That's one of the things
too
that
early.
You
it was too early. Yeah, 9 a.m.
Exactly. 11, but considered at 9. I think that's that is part of it, right? It is in some cases. Simply, and even with the raid example, right, I see the same thing. They would always have a hard time going to PC just because of the anti-mobile game almost identity that some people have made to themselves. Genuinely, I think even with all those negative comments, I don't even know if that was ever a play to get new players.
Yeah.
That was... Hey, indeed, you're on your Zoom call. You can't just open your mobile phone, but you can certainly grind.
Horrible for productivity.
Yeah, exactly. But, it is a reality. And I think part of it is, and we would phrase that a little bit differently than grinding away on a Zoom call. But it is, your audience is not always on their phone. And sometimes they're on a PC. And
sometimes they have to pretend that they're working.
Exactly. And again, here's where we look into more of our consumer research, and this is not exactly mind-blowing information, but the people that play on multiple platforms tend to play more hours, and they tend to be spending more.
Of course, because they're thinking about the game all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it doesn't even mean for one game, right? But if people play on multiple, you know, that's not mind-blowing, but I think it is, you know, if you have a game, you're in a position that user growth is very tough.
Yeah.
Your very first thing that you want to do is to get your game to your players whenever they are at the time. And that can be ported to PC.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have to be a play to expand addressable market massively mm-hmm. or to attract all these this entire new PC audience. It is...
just incremental.
Yeah, incremental.
Yeah, and Google Play is bringing up tools. I think Clash of Clans is coming to PC through those.
Yeah, Supercell signed up for their beta.
But it's not going to be like mind-blowing.
No,
it's going to be probably like slowing down the decline.
Stabilizing.
Yeah. The other part that I was kind of like when I was thinking when I was reading, I was getting a perception, especially reading the comments that of on the reports that a little bit of a like a I don't know if this is me. I interpret it as arrogance because I always felt that there was an arrogance that coming in from AAA side.
Yeah.
Towards mobile, where they thought that mobile is like a cheap version. It's almost like a James Cameron looking at YouTube videos and be like, what is it? Like, I can do this in my sleep.
Yeah.
Like, do you know how good? But it's not that. It's just a different form of entertainment.
It is.
And the requirements are different and the taste is different, even though the people could be the same. And so I felt in this one, looking now the other way around, where mobile is arrogant towards the PC and console, where like, do you know what we've done on mobile? How good we are at monetization and at this? And like, we're going to come in. You guys don't even know how well we understand user behavior and data and marketing. We're going to just dominate this. And it's kind of the same as AAA saying, we're going to bring real games to mobile.
and you know, both sides, it's not going to be that easy.
Yeah.
But that, there's some validity, I think, to the argument. And as we've talked about, like console developers do struggle with live service. And that's bread and butter. Right, you're a successful mobile developer. You know how to do
it's
that.
It's all about live service.
Plus, the quality of mobile games—not all mobile games, but certainly some mobile games—have gone up to the point where they're not necessarily lower quality knockoff products from PC and Co. Absolutely not. So, that's why we put it in. Like, I think that we're going to see a massive shift in the market and all of a sudden all those mobile devs are going to go to PC and console, mobile's going to go down indefinitely, but we predict a shift there and an incremental shift, and part of that is indeed incremental getting the games that you're making for mobile on PC so your players can play them, but there's also an argument to be made to develop not exclusively PC and console but cross-platform. And if you have a good game that's cross-platform, there's some very good success cases out there.
Yes, 100%. I think it's just, like, in the end, like, for all the developers doing that, I think those who succeed, whether they're coming from console, whether they're coming from PC or mobile, those who really respect the area where they go in and coming in from the perspective, like, we actually don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
We want to learn. We want to succeed are the ones that do. And then the sort of arrogance that I've conquered my own platform, and I'm not now going like a weight class up and just going to take this one as well. That leads to a knockout.
No. And there's one more point I want to make on this mobile developers bringing to PC and console. I think particularly on console development, and fair, right? The results are there. So I can't exactly fault them. But development still skews toward a certain audience. Like there's an overabundance of action-oriented shooter games, whereas we know from doing this consumer research over the years, but many other people have said the same thing, the audience on PC and console is not just that. Mobile developers are very used to developing for diverse audiences.
Yeah, yes.
And there's opportunity there. Like, there is room to succeed in these markets if you're willing to develop against the norm.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point. Moving on to, we got two more,
right,
and then the rest of them. Xbox Store launch on mobiles. Well, Xbox will launch a mobile store on Android. I think this is given. I think this
it's been confirmed.
They've confirmed.
Right? Yeah.
But I have the question is, why? Because, like, why would anybody use the Microsoft Store? Okay, I get it. If you put in all the Microsoft Office software, you're going to put in all the key games, the Candy Crushes, the Call of Duties into this Xbox Store and the Blizzard's games. There's a lot of, you know, content that is must-have almost. I get it. But at the same time, what benefit of this is, because we know with the legal, with the latest documentation in this epic Apple drama, not drama, court case, is that they will charge you 27% fee if you use, if you pay in the apps that are downloaded through a different store. So normally it's 30, now it's going to be 27. So it's going to be actually more expensive for the store.
Because you also have your costs.
They all, because they also have their own cost, or their own payment service providers. What's why? Like, you can do this, but why the hell would you do this?
Yeah. Well, that's part of the reason why we did put it like not an app store yet. Android first. Android. App store once, you know, if they are able to find a business model that works. I think it's a game play as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of strong franchises that Microsoft now owns, especially now with Activision Blizzard's King acquisition, that should help get initial users in. Although Candy Crush is not going to be removed from the App Store or Google Play or anything.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy. but then I think the extension of it is you use that to get Game Pass on mobile. You power that with cloud gaming. There we go. And then, you know, hopefully you get that mobile engagement because, you know, again, we can tie back to what we were talking about earlier. One of the reasons why I think subscriptions now don't work is because, or have struggled to work, is because it's still really only convenient to play those when you're at home on your PC or your console. Because the experience on mobile is restricted by access to the ecosystem. I think that's the play. I'm not sure if it will succeed.
Yeah.
But I because like you, I don't see the benefit of just being an alternative app store and having games on there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, what is this solving?
Yeah.
And how is this benefit? It's confusing. And Microsoft, you know, we've talked to lengths about Xbox Game Pass, how that is not looking like a service that is going to carry on.
Well.
Or successfully.
Yeah.
I mean, it can carry.
Microsoft can carry on.
Microsoft is the biggest company in the world at the moment, I think, in terms of valuation.
Yeah. So they can keep going for a while.
This is a chunk of change for them.
Yeah.
But they are definitely making interesting moves. Like, the one that I've been predicting is that they acquire Unity.
Oh yeah,
well, and then through that they just waive the fee, the Unity Pass fee,
and then you get Unity developers on the
exact if you publish on their store.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to pay the fee, and now the store is becoming even more robust with so many games.
Yeah,
and where it can actually challenge App Store, and the App Store becomes like for apps. Just like they want it. And then the games will be in the Xbox store.
Everybody wins in the end.
Yeah, and it's like, you hate games, Apple? Cool story. Yeah. Here's Xbox store.
We'll take your games.
Yeah, then. And we'll put it over here, and you can have your apps, and you can promote them all day, and then Apple Arcade as well. And we'll have all the other games, if that's fine for you.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
Microsoft, do it.
Yeah, make it happen.
Apple doesn't want to have games into the App Store.
No, they've shown for the last decade
that they
will do anything in their power.
Yeah, to not have
to keep it down.
All right, the most interesting part, generative AI.
Oh, yeah.
Will accelerate game production in few ways.
Yeah.
So we have cost pressures, as we talked about. The budgets are going down. So AI is at the forefront of all the conversations. All the big techs from Microsoft to Google are pushing AI.
Yep.
Apple hasn't pushed it yet, but for sure they have something. Facebook as well, or Meta. But till this point, you know, having, you know, organizing the Istanbul Gaming Summit in March 7th, we got a big AI talk from Google DeepMind.
Nice.
When I was getting other speakers for that panel, it was very hard to find people from studios who want to talk about how they have used AI in successful way, like tangibly successful. Not like I did ChatGPT for my report to investors, but really successful usage of AI in software at this point is, in my experience, non-existent. And when I was asking investors to join this panel who have done investments into AI, they also were very hesitant to come because at this point, what I understood, AI is a story.
Okay.
If you're a hardware company, it is business.
Yes.
If you're an NVIDIA, everybody's buying, or AMD or whoever, they're buying your hardware to do the AI. But if you're a software development company, at this point, I'm not saying you're getting bamboozled with AI, but at this point, the business is not there. The story is strong, but it's not correlating with the money.
Okay. I mean, we anecdotally have heard some other stories.
Positive ones?
Positive ones.
That's good.
I think the finals is one where I will refer to. The finals spoke about using AI in development. And maybe part of why studios are hesitant to appear, although the Istanbul is more for, like, it's for professionals, so you didn't necessarily reach the public, but I think people are a bit afraid to talk about it because they're worried about backlash from the...
From AI?
No, from players.
Backlash from players for using AI?
Yes.
Really?
That's, it happens. But I think the point, what we want to talk about AI is, like, I don't expect, and we don't expect, that there will be an AI revolution or something like that, right? It's not that we flip a switch and next year all games are going to be developed by AI.
Like, half the crew.
Yeah. There's going to be slowly and surely more use of AI. They have to as well, like with lower budgets, less staff, and ever increasing scope of games, particularly, you know, PC console, but mobile as well, actually. You know, it kind of has to rely on AI to be able to deliver the same kind of experience. And there's some success stories. There's, like I said, the finals uses AI and AI voice lines, I think, and there's been some criticism there. Like
AI voice?
Yeah, so, AI voice.
Got it.
Yeah. Like, not all players like it. I don't want to dismiss player sentiment, but, you know, there's always a lot of voices. And in the end, there's voices against Palworld as well. Like, Palworld supposedly used AI and copyright infringement, but it's still
the crooks.
It's still sold more than 3 million. Is it up to 4 million units already? Yeah. It's so I'm going to... I get it, but I'll ignore the naysayers. I think for the finals, how well it's been performing, it's been a success.
Finals has been success?
Yeah.
Finals being this
shooter game
out of Stockholm by former DICE president or CEO or Patrick.
Right? I don't remember. I'm bad with that.
For some reason I'm thinking about.
The finals is doing well.
Owned by Korean company Nexon.
Yeah.
It's doing well?
It's doing well.
Somehow I got the feeling in the podcast from Phil and Crest that it's not doing well.
Well, our engagement data shows it's doing well.
It's doing well. I'm glad of it. Like, I'm out of that. So when I hear their perspective and... Okay, got it. So that's doing well. And they've used AI in voice.
Yeah, something. Among other things. Like, they wouldn't fully disclose what they're doing.
Got it.
Square Enix was in their latest investor presentation talking about the use of AI in game projects. And they had been using it for... one of their games, I'm terrible with names today, I'm sorry, but the smaller game that launched recently by Square Enix had used AI in development. Last year there was High on Life that used AI successfully, I think, at least it was well received.
Yeah.
So it's bits and pieces, like it's not like this is a revolution that all successful games now use AI, but we see some of these more and more examples trickling in, And that's where we kind of predict that to go as well, like throughout the year, but also throughout the coming years. It's a slow burn of more and more AI being used in game development. And like, hopefully, at least for me as a fan, it's not going to replace
creativity,
stifle creativity, but
automate,
create the space for creatives to do what they do.
The big thing that I'm hearing from investors is smaller teams doing premium games with the help of AI. So basically, you could do a good AA game, premium AA game, with a team of 20 to 25. Like an old school AAA team is like, you know, Medal of Honor was like 30 people.
Yeah,
so like that type of a team would do what a current team is 100, but they would do it with 30 people.
Yeah.
And so there's a clear speed advantage, there's a cost advantage, and they're able to through that come up with.
And I hope that's not seen as a bad thing, right? It unlocks a lot of potential and possibility for smaller teams to be successful and to try things at a larger scale than they would
be able to without. It's capitalism. You cannot stop something that is more efficient.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there probably people had feelings about horses and versus cars, and I get it. But in the end, we have, 2% of the horses that we used to have a one?
You can't stop it.
Cars have more horsepower.
Yeah.
And, and I think in this case as well, it is a tool that is allowing a lot of things, and it's not overnight. But when it happens, gradually, I think we'll just see more efficient teams.
Yeah.
And through that, hopefully, more compact.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Doing the same thing as they're doing currently. Well, Tom, we've covered a lot of things. We've covered the market. We talked about lean year for gaming companies, multi-game subscription growth will slow down, companies will turn to developing premium games, mobile developers will turn to PC gaming, Xbox will launch mobile store on Android, generative AI will accelerate game production in a few ways. There are other predictions that we did not cover, and for that, ladies and gentlemen, there's a link in description. That's how we drive traffic to Newzoo. Check it out.
Thank you very much.
Good comments from executives, from people who you work with, about these trends. So it's not only the cool graphs, but it's also some text, some context. And as always, connect with Tom,
With
Newzoo, get the report. If you don't want to do anything with the report, get them to consult you on the custom report.
We can do
that. And they will do that. But always a pleasure. And thank you so much for this.
Thank you for the invitation.
On that note, we're out of the trap house. Thank you for listening to the whole episode. If you like this podcast, please do leave a comment and share the episode. If you want to access the Deconstructor of Fun community with hundreds of senior games folk, go to our website and apply to the Slack group. And if you want to get notified of all the new content we have coming out every week, do subscribe to the weekly Deconstructor of Fun newsletter. Finally, do remember, we love you guys and we appreciate you guys. Catch you next time.